This is Radio Kate here at the Radio Festival 2010 in Salford. It's not raining this morning, but there are a few bleary eyes, but not in this morning's session. We battled through the hangovers. We got in to see and hear the wise words of people like the man in front of me now, Clive Dickens, big boss at Absolute. So tell us a bit about your session.
Well, first, it was a challenging session because of the fact that I think we were all still in the bar at 4:30, and the alarm was going off at 7:30, so the fact that we actually made it there at all is a bit of a miracle, particularly at my age. But the themes of our session were about engagement. I spotted that everyone used that word. It's the word of the moment, and it's an appropriate word, but I think we have to maybe slightly temper the use of it to make sure it doesn't become, you know, a word that we don't actually mean. Secondly, the themes were about spot advertising. It was about money. So it was from an Absolute perspective, now 60% of our revenue now is only 60% of spot, meaning 40% coming from everywhere else. In the industry, typically it would be sort of 15 to 20% coming from everything else. And I think if we want to push ahead. So that was the theme of making advertising interactive in the same way. So when we think about content, I personally believe we shouldn't just think about the presenters and the music and the news. We've got to think about that other 10 minutes now as well. We've got to make that as entertaining and as interactive as the music itself or the presenters. So I was pleased that we're talking about that. And the other theme was about, you know, is there money in this? Now, from our perspective, the example that we shared was very profitable for us and in the hundreds of thousands of pounds category. Shazam themselves, and rather staggeringly, are now at 75 million users, adding 1 million users a week. This is a small private British tech company based in Hammersmith, London, in now has its 10th anniversary. They are it's like the Silicon Valley of British innovation, and I think Shazam will become a consumer brand, and Shazam will become a very successful financial company in the near future. And then we heard from Pete from Imagination, and another incredibly successful technology company, who told us today that, or most recently, Imagination's market cap has just tipped the £1 billion. So you've got a £1 billion company who are actually spending lots of money in our radio industry. And I think the more we all need £1 billion companies. So it was a pretty good morning all around.
And they were talking about flow songs, the idea of tagging music and buying music. Do you think that's going to be one of the sort of important things for financing radio in the future?
No, and not for financing. Well, I think what they are doing is that they're teaching the community the value of engagement. And the best way to do that is to go to the stuff they love the most, which is the songs. I don't believe for a second that Pure believe that that's a massive revenue driver. It's just about their objective is to get more people connected. So he shared that they have now 50 to 60,000 connected base. And obviously, so far, the connection has been mainly the advantage of the manufacturer or the content owner. So you need to start showing consumer advantages of that connection. So I'm pretty sure that they're not thinking that anyone's made loads of money out of this. They do want to make sure that we get connected. I think connection is really important, whether it's provides visualization services, tagging services, or in fact to start measuring our return on investment and effectiveness of advertising. So I think what we'll see, Flow Songs is the first connected product that allows a consumer benefit. I think there'll be a lot more over the coming months.
What actually I was thinking when he was talking about Flow Songs, he said not everybody who tags a song will go on and buy it, but quite often you can see what people are tagging, get an idea of what they like, and I thought, well, wouldn't that be a great way to do music research? Instead of waiting 2 weeks for your surveys to go out and finally getting something on a playlist, because you don't dare take the risk with your advertisers, if you could just get that information instantly, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it is, and it's obviously still a sample. Actually, for us, one of the interesting bits of feedback mechanism we have on music now is streaming music services, because with streaming music services, where the base is in the millions, and and you're not necessarily making an immediate purchase. So if you look at the Spotify top lists, which are actually remarkably similar to the iTunes list. So the whole digital economy of download and stream has become a great big research piece. And I'm not sure that the Flow Songs will actually replace the research, but the whole, these top list charts and iTunes charts are actually a better barometer, because we're off a much wider base and we're learning a lot more as an industry about taste. And in fact, I was having a really random conversation with Bono, believe it or not, and he came into Absolute Radio about a year ago. And he then, at that point, as a musician, was starting to talk about, I don't care how many people buy my record. I want to know how many people are listening to it. And he's actually an entrepreneur himself, has made some tech investments, and through his company called Elevation Partners. And, you know, they've got all the money they need from ticket sales and albums. And what he was actually obsessing about is that just if I sell a million albums, that doesn't necessarily mean that people like the album. They basically bought the marketing, they like the band, they like the brand. Whereas if people are listening to my songs on streaming music services, then they're actually engaging with me and I know that they might buy my tickets. And it was really interesting to hear, you know, a relatively mature rocker completely change his mind, the model of engagement for music. And I think that's a lesson to all of us.
And you were saying in your talk that you've just started doing, you know, putting on events that, that people can buy tickets to. How important do you think that's going to be in the future?
I mean, our event strategy is dwarfed by the success of Global. I mean, the way that they've created this new radio event category, born out of the success in the late 90s and early 2000s of the Party in the Park strategy.
I used to go to those. When they were free, way back in the day.
Yes, and then we started charging. But there were, you know, it's... So, you know, Richard and Ashley have done a phenomenal job with that, creating winter and summer event strategy, and we could all learn a thing or two from that. So we had our first real toe in the water this summer with 2,000 venue, and we sold out, made a nice profit out of it. It was part of our relationship with Dylan Skinner and our relationship with Sony Ericsson. So Sony Ericsson were there. It was, you know, they obviously engaged with us to reach 2 million people with their tenancy package, but the 2,000 people that came to the event, they were basically, you know, using people trialing their phones or giving people gifts, and they were the real strong advocates. And it was rather than just being a typical radio event for competition winners, we said, no, we're actually going to make this a profit center. We'll make the app a profit center, we'll make the event a profit center. And it, you know, that the revenue that we made out of that obviously wasn't as great as the money we're making out of the broadcast, but it was a really important culture for us to understand that that this was a profit. So right down to, I made every staff member pay for their ticket unless they were working. So the whole staff was saying, "Oh, can we go?" I said, "No, this is a profit centre. It's only 2,000. You know, if you want to go, you can pay for your ticket." Now, I didn't mean pay personally. I say pay off their budget, because the culture was that if you want clients there, but I wanted each staff department and to think about this being a separate P&L, because we could have filled that place with friends, family, staff. And they did. And so the sales department then could think, okay, we're buying tickets. If they're going to take a client to take that, they would buy the tickets, and particularly with a small capacity. And that's about a cultural change of saying, what role can events play? But we're really only just beginning.
So this term engagement, we've heard it a lot. You've used it a lot when you've just been talking to me. What do we mean by that? How are you going to engage listeners? It's more than just, you know, the old style broadcasting app people. With all the sort of social media tools like that, I mean, where do you start? Some people still don't seem to understand that social media and that kind of thing is important. How do you persuade them? How do you convince them? And how do you use that to your best advantage?
Well, you know, there's an engagement scale right through from, you know, a very engaging product and brand like a Spotify through to a small local radio station that can create engagement just by having live programming, live broadcasters rather than voice tracking, and actually having broadcasters. And the radio business model is alive and well, with one very big exception, and I mentioned it on the stage today, sort of more music, less talk, music quantity strategies are inevitably in decline. And at the moment, there are some very successful stations making a lot of money out of that, but it is... And that is coming to an end. For me, that is the thin end of that range of engagement. It's very lean back, it's very low cost, it's been traditionally very profitable, but it's ending. And so if you're in a small station, in a large station, it's the investment in people. So you don't have to obsess, if you don't have the resources that we do the research and development interactive, then engagement at a local level, community or student radio, is about people. And we've got to remember that radio is a people business.
I was actually really heartened to hear that you were investing in personalities and people, because I think that's the one strength that radio has. I mean, anybody can stick their iPod on, set up a Last FM playlist, whatever it is, but it's the people that engage you, bring you back, keep you coming back to a station. And if it's all voice tracked, if it's all generic links, then radio is losing out. It's got one really big strength, which is connecting with people. Yeah. And I just think sometimes people seem to forget that.
And also live. I think, you know, we do a fair amount of voice tracking on some of our services too, and that's for economic reasons. But our ambition is to go as live as we can, and that's another area of engagement that we with technology. We heard Mark Rock from Audioboo talk about the fact that he doesn't see Audioboo creating a live product anytime soon. Not because of his ambition or his product, actually because it's just the internet doesn't work very well in that way, particularly when lots of people do the same thing at the same time. So I think, you know, radio's got to embrace its broadcast platform, and you know, people and live is, you know, we've got to get back to some grassroots.
And if we were having this conversation in 5 years' time, what do you think will be the big thing? Will we still be talking about DAB? Is it the future?
Well, first of all, I would have hoped that I would have gone to bed earlier and not had this terrible morning voice that I have. Apologised for that. So in 5 years' time, a little, even older. So I think inevitably we'll still be talking about digital radio, and but we'll be, you know, much more optimistic about the mix of platforms that have come out by that time. And, you know, 100% penetration, you know, is unlikely to be where we are in 5 years' time. And therefore, the debate will go on. The interesting thing is that whether what people don't seem to get, who are basically digital naysayers, is that we'll have to replace the transmission technology anyway inside the next 5 to 7 years. And you know, what nobody's actually got in their budgets either is to replace all these very expensive AM and FM transmitters, which are all going to basically wear out. And you know, it's because there is an assumption, correctly, that they will no longer be used in the future. And that's, you know, some of these transmitters have been broadcasting almost non-stop for 30, 40 years. And it's, so, you know, it's only expensive because actually investing in hardware is expensive. And we've got ourselves a little wrapped up about the expense of DAB. Well, once these old AM transmitters and FM transmitters need replacing, that, you know, there's hundreds and thousands of those too, and that's expensive too. So it's just, you know, that's, we're always inevitably therefore going to be talking about the infrastructure needed to reach consumers, and the, probably one of the best infrastructure companies in this country, I think, is Sky. And you know, they will talk on their earnings calls and about how much money they're spending on just on you know, infrastructure and box technology and satellite installations, and it's you know, it's our equivalent of sort of like paper to newspaper industry, and it's always going to be there. So whether it's a digital discussion, you know, I will always be a technology one.
Thank you very much.